It is Friday, December 30th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today's rundown, Geek News, Tech of 2005, Predictions of 2006, and your questions and comments.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on our program, we'll focus on geek news and then blend into some cool technology of 2005 that we seem to remember. And then we'll do some check out some of our geeks predictions for 2006 and technology upcoming. But this show is not just about us, far from it. It's about your pain and pleasure with technology. That's why, during the second half of the show, as we do every week, we'll welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Or contact us right now. Get in the queue now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Welcome to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks: Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control; Sean Cleveland, technical reviews manager at NVIDIA; and Drew. Drew, wait a second. What's your new job? Where is it?
Network Appliance.
Okay,
I work
for
a startup company called
Network Appliance. Product manager.
That's
product
right.
Manager at Network Appliance. Drew Meyer. Okay, sorry. Thank you. I didn't have that in my script.
What do they do?
Network Appliance makes...
Network appliances?
Yeah, imagine that. It makes massively parallel, or let's see, we make big storage systems, giant boxes that store stuff. In fact, the movie King Kong, which is out in the theaters right now, all the digital animation stuff, was stored on Network Appliance filers in New Zealand while the company designed the CGI stuff.
Cool. All right. So small to medium-sized businesses?
Network Appliance focuses on enterprise stuff to this day. Really, most of our audience probably, unless they're in the IT industry, doesn't ever use a Network Appliance.
Well, considering we go into Silicon Valley, a lot of our listeners are in the IT community. So, Network Appliance. Okay, there's
there
a great big plug for Drew's startup. But we'll go on and actually do some geek news. So, I'll start with Mr. Cleveland, because you look so pretty today.
Oh, I guess I should pull the papers out of my mouth.
Yeah, I think so.
Hello,
Face
good morning.
Radio, is that what they say?
Happy last Friday. Everybody.
That's right. Next week, we'll be on Saturday the 7th. Same time, different day.
10 o'clock in the morning, Saturdays from now on.
That's right. Right after Dr. Don's show.
Is that
Health
same
Matters.
Geek time, same geek channel.
I wonder if we'll all be healthier because we're on after Dr. Don.
I think we will be healthier.
Pick our brain.
Yes, definitely.
So, Intel unveiled its new logo and brand this past week.
The International Business or International Business Machines, is that what Intel stands for?
Intel?
No, Intel, sorry.
That would be IBM.
That would be IBM.
Maybe I should pay attention to what Sean is saying.
This is Intel.
Stands for Hewlett Packard now.
So their 37-year-old logo, the blue lowercase Intel logo with the dropped E,
yeah,
that we're all familiar
the
with,
E lowered down,
is going away. It'll be replaced with a new logo, which they haven't unveiled yet, but if you do a little searching on the internet, you can see what all the new logos look like. They're keeping the lowercase letters, but the E's no longer dropped, and their famous whoosh that used to go around the Intel Inside logo now encircles the Intel logo.
Okay.
Intel, about the little song? Dun, 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 dun.
You know, they don't say anything about that.
Really?
Ooh, do it again. Do
no,
it again.
No.
So,
key. Everybody knows that, though.
The Intel Inside branding campaign, which is worth like $36 billion right now, that brand, Intel Inside, is worth $36 billion. Amazing.
How do you...
It's going away. Actually, it sounds like they're going to use it more for other companies who use Intel stuff. They're still going to have an Inside campaign, but it's not going to be tied just to Intel. It'll be tied to their processors. So what they're trying to move away from is the core PC business,
mm-hmm,
and more towards its consumer products.
All right.
And they're replacing Pentium. It looks like it's going to become Core.
So Pentium's changing to Core.
Yeah, well, I don't think the Pentium is going away necessarily. Maybe it is with Yona. That's a code name of a next-generation processor. None of this is really clear yet because they haven't actually shown what the logos look like. But it looks like Core is going to be the name of their next-generation chip. And it'll be Core Solo for single processor and Core Duo for
dual
processor. There's talk on the web about Solo because I guess Lucasfilms owns that one. Should be interesting.
All right, thank you very much for that, Sean. Miles, please.
Well, 2005 has been a pretty bad year in terms of security.
Okay. Why? Because the Microsoft Internet Explorer still exists? Is that?
Well, here's some data that may actually lend some credence to that statement.
Well, there is. I mean, this is talking about. Lyle is also referring to a worm that's going, or a virus that's going around with Internet Explorer with regard to Windows Media Files. Windows Metafile.
Mm-hmm.
Hippographic file, and I recommend that people go to different resources, either like semantic.com or to Microsoft's site itself to find out the advisory.
It's GeekSpeak. It's time for you to be reminded that you need to upgrade your computer and keep it safe with virus protection, unless, of course, you're on a Macintosh or Linux machine, in which case there's no viruses. Go on.
That's not true.
So,
right?
That's not true. Yeah.
Okay.
There's viruses for Linux.
Well,
not as many.
Concept, anyway.
I wouldn't say that's the problem.
But something I thought was interesting was saying, with regard to security, if you take a day, any given day, where a particular browser has a vulnerability that is remotely exploitable, then you say that that day, and that doesn't have a patch available.
Okay. So no patch for a bug that makes a vulnerability in the software.
Right.
So you're exposed. You're flying blind.
Right. On any given day, then you mark off that day to say that is a vulnerable day.
Okay.
That's our metric here. Now, go through the year, every day from 2005.
January 1st, 2005.
Right. To today.
To last week when this thing got published.
Right, to last week.
Mm-hmm.
And what it came out to be is, if you were using Internet Explorer, you were 98% unsafe.
So 98% of the days of 2005, Internet Explorer was unsafe. You couldn't patch the bug vulnerability. People knew about the bug vulnerability.
Right.
And these are vulnerabilities that people knew about that were published publicly.
Right.
Okay. How was Oprah? Opera.
Opera?
Why do I always do that?
Yeah. Opera was 17%.
So, difference between 98 and 17. Out of curiosity, that...
Now, wait a minute. In all fairness, how many machines out there have Opera and Mozilla installed versus Explorer?
Well, Mozilla's getting up to like 10% now.
Well,
okay, so we're talking maybe 15% of the entire
market.
But
that doesn't matter, because it's not about people exploiting the vulnerabilities. It's about the vulnerabilities even existing.
The fact that there's a known vulnerability and it hasn't been patched yet.
And you could argue that because the open source paradigm for Mozilla, more of the viruses that exist would be known about than in Internet Explorer, because Internet Explorer's code base is private, so you actually have to run into the problem rather than diagnose that a problem might exist.
Depends on who you talk to about.
So how bad is Firefox?
Firefox is 15% unsafe, but strangely enough, these were mostly Mac holes. The Windows version of Firefox was only 7% unsafe.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that. I'm going to go on with the news story.
Wait a minute. I got to say something else here. It seems to me that if Explorer were 98% vulnerable, we would be hearing a lot more about people having actual problems. I mean,
do you listen to GeekSpeak?
These are alarm. Oh, come on. These are alarmist numbers.
No, Drew. Every week we get a call from somebody that says, I lost data on my computer. We have viruses. We don't always actually talk about
are they running antivirus software?
That's the point, though.
Is it the fault of the browser that they lost their data?
Not always, but because there's vulnerabilities in software, antivirus software is just it's like a backup. It's like the police and bad laws. You know,
I'm absolutely a fan of Mozilla for principle other than just the security, but yeah. I think 98% is a pretty horrible number.
Okay, let's just say this: 98% of the days of 2005. Microsoft Internet Explorer had a known vulnerability that there was no patch for.
That's all we're saying. Yep.
Okay. There is a virus right now that's pretty rampant taking advantage of one of those holes. That hole does have a patch. If you upgrade your Internet Explorer, you will be safe. But go on.
Yeah, this is actually on a semi-related note.
Okay, make it quick.
Okay.
I want to get to Drew because he's got a prettier voice. So
okay.
Go on.
Jeez. That, I got this from CNN's money section. And this is related because of vulnerabilities in software, this is a way for criminals to access your system. The Treasury Department has stated that cybercrime has now outgrown illegal drug sales and annual proceeds.
Get out of here.
More money comes in from cybercrime now. And at the same time, Department of Homeland Security's 2005 research budget for cybersecurity programs was cut 7%.
Wow. Wow. Our government at work, huh? Say no to drugs.
Was it?
Lose your credit card instead.
Thank you, Miles, for that. Drew.
It's a perfect segue because being a data storage guy and talking about insecurity here, this 2005 was a big year for storage insecurity, or I should rather insecurity. Between February and October, more than 50 million Americans had their personal information compromised.
50 million?
50 million Americans. So
that's a big percentage.
300 million in the country.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a little bit alarmist as well. What that means is that most people had some information that was on a piece of tape somewhere. Large data companies will back up their data onto tape and then take that tape off to a secure vault in an archive somewhere. And the tapes are typically not encrypted, so that if I steal a tape, I can stick it into a tape drive and read the data that's on that tape.
Assuming you're a geek, which you are.
Right,
okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which most of these cyber criminals are pretty geeky guys. So 50 million people had information that was on a piece of tape that got released or lost or fell off the back of the truck, and that data on that tape was unencrypted. So
what you're saying is, again, most likely most of those people are safe, but it's a possibility that somebody has that information.
It's just in the storage industry in particular, that whole idea of encryption and security is getting hotter and hotter. The more data gets put on electronic storage, and the more that is critical financial personal data.
And what you're saying basically is, if these tapes would have been encrypted, this wouldn't have been really an issue. They lose a tape,
cost of the tape, you know, you lose $50 worth of tape, but you really don't lose, you don't have to notify the end users that their data's been compromised.
It's interesting how much security practices get into play in the computer arena, and a lot of discussion about a lot of infrastructure, but then a simple thing like, who's driving that tape from this point to this point and putting it in the vault, that becomes a weakness, especially when you're shipping it via a company, and
There are a handful of companies out there. There's one giant in this business that does the archive for most everybody, and they've done a pretty good job about it. But I think for us end users and us regular folks, what that means is you're going to see legislation and increased cost being passed on to us from the legislation, which requires the industry to then incur a higher cost in performing these encryption tasks, which obviously we will pay in bank fees down the road.
Right. All right.
Security costs money.
And thank you. The next news story I'm going to take from Chris Dunphy. Hey, Chris, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, guys. It's good to hear you guys.
And
see you on virtual telephone connection lines.
So, Chris, I'm not really dumping you on a news story. You don't have to cover a news story because that's kind of a surprise. But I just told you a moment ago that we're changing times. And so, hi.
Hi. And I want to congratulate you guys on getting to Saturday, because that means I'm like suddenly having this vision of 2006 Geek Weekend Saturday Fest. I'm in Santa Cruz. I'll drive down from San Francisco and play with you guys.
All right. Don't do it every week. We don't want to hear you every week. But
oh, hell no. You guys aren't that interesting.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I'm sorry I didn't inform you earlier, but I'm really glad that we'll be seeing you a little bit more of you. Hey, you know, you're welcome to come down next weekend if you can make it.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll start throwing some Saturdays on the calendar and come down and bring some Mobile Geekly goodness.
Mobile Geekly goodness.
Pencil us in? Okay, thanks, man.
I'll use my
stylus. Chris Dunphy, formerly from Palm Source, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, take care. Congratulations.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Chris.
All right, we're going to keep doing news because, you know, today is about that kind of thing, and I figure we got some good news stories. I'm going to go with you, Sean. You seem to be on top of your game today. Did you have coffee?
Yes. Coffee Cat out of Scotts Valley.
You know, I did.
Great little place.
I did the.
Oh, is that a plug? I'm sorry.
I did Lava Rock down on the west side.
I like Lava Rock.
But my normal place in Felton is Mountain Roasting Company. Steve.
If they don't have free Wi-Fi,
place.
I just get blocked outside.
Mountain
I
Roasting
can't
Company.
Move inside,
yeah. Your body can't get through the door. All right, go on. Enough plugs for coffee shops. Go on. Oh, wait. Cafe Benny downtown. Great place. Okay, go on.
So, if you're really interested in next generation DVD technology.
And who isn't?
Who isn't?
Right.
Yeah, you've probably been hearing or following about HD DVD and Blu-ray competing formats because they'll be incompatible with each other. So, like the Beta VHS wars, this is the war of 2006 in the optical drive world. So, the Blu-ray camp just got a big announcement from Pioneer. They will be releasing the BDR-101A, their first Blu-ray DVD-ROM or next-gen DVD, HD DVD drive. It holds 25 gigabytes of data. Not as much as the HD DVD disc does. They have two versions that hold 15 and 30 gig, Although Blu-ray says that they'll have a 50 gig version available in the spring, which personally I doubt because they don't even have their 25 gig version ready yet.
Right.
But we'll see. For those of you who are wondering just how much data that is, or how long it's going to take,
Sean,
to...
how much data is that?
Well, that was wrong. What I meant to say is, so you got 25 gigs of data. Just how long will it take to burn one of those
discs?
That's
right. I remember the first DVDs took like an hour to burn.
Oh, so this Pioneer drive will be a 2X drive, and that's all they're saying. But if you do a little digging, you find that the transfer rate for Blu-ray 1X speed is 36 megabytes per second. 54 megabytes is required to transfer HD content. So these first drives are going to be 2X speed, which is 72 megabytes per second. So 72 megabytes per second to fill 25 gigs of space. Yeah, that's going to take a long time.
It's going to take a long time.
72 megs per second? That's hard drive transfer speeds a lot of times.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be because it's DVD content.
Yeah, but imagine writing 25 gigs of stuff to a hard drive. It still takes you some time.
Yeah, but I mean, for folks out there, is that when you have a CD plus,
or even folks listening, you know, just us.
Sorry. Yeah, CD-ROM drive or a DVD-ROM drive, that's so much slower than your hard drive.
Yeah, but also,
this is a major shift.
Yeah. A hard drive also, you're writing contiguously.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a laser, and the disk is spinning at a really high speed. So all the data is being written on a track.
Linearly,
in a spiral, where that's very different with a hard drive and multiple platters. You know, fragmented data
systems.
You know, there's your master boot record, which has to keep track of where everything went to.
Right.
On a disk, you don't have all that. So there's a lot more going on with a hard drive.
So I have another question for you, Sean. When is the launch date for this thing? When's it shipping?
Actually, in 2006.
2000.
Gee, day after
early
tomorrow.
2006.
All right, and then are there any disks that are 25 gigabytes that are available to stick in this thing once you buy it?
Not yet. And you know what? It's not going to be for everyone.
Yeah.
The content creation professionals, people who are really going to use this, who are going to put high-definition movies on these things, they're still trying to figure out just how difficult it's going to be to mass-produce these things.
Right. Stamping them might be difficult.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean, for that. I'm going to open the next news again, Miles.
Well, I have a comment on Sean's article where he was talking about Blu-rays taking some time to get out the door. Was that apparently Pioneer does have a drive that they want to, that they have ready for market next month, but it's DRM issues that are forcing the delay.
Uh-huh.
The digital rights management for folks out there.
What's the fear? What's the concern? I can put all my movies on one disc?
Well, there's still some squabbling as to the algorithms are going to be using to protect the content on the discs so that people can't just take a drive and copy a movie off of it and then distribute it on the internet.
And it's the same problem we have today, right?
Right.
Just larger capacities.
Right. But at the same time, DVDs were supposed to solve that, and it's after DVDs were released, they had people cracking the algorithm.
Right.
And then being able to play DVDs elsewhere and rip them off of DVDs and stuff like that. And so I think what a lot of media companies are trying to do is avoid having the same thing happen again.
Right.
Well, CSS was software code. It was basically a hack onto hardware that didn't have any sort of digital rights management built into it. Whereas these next generation DVD-ROM drives, Blu-ray and HD DVD, are all using hardware encrypted chips to pass these you know,
right.
You know, 64-bit, 128-bit keys back and forth to each other.
So until they get...
So you would actually need to put a hardware device between these chips to crack this in real time. Very difficult.
Would you really? Because the data that's going to come off the DVD is still going to be digital data, right? It's not going to be analog when it comes off the DVD player.
Unless it can only speak with software that has...
So it would be still software
certified for use with it,
theoretically, be able to crack that again and do this. That's pretty much what happened with the...
Yeah, I think the analog portion of this is really the issue.
Well, there's pending laws about analog devices. We talked about it last week that...
that name being the analog hole, yeah.
There's a big push that analog devices will not be available to get content onto and play easily, which is...
Yeah, or insane. No, rather that digital devices will not have a straight analog output that is, you know...
One way to prevent headphones. Is to make sure you don't work with it.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, Drew, you good with another news story? Should we go on with our predictions of 2006 or our...
I have another news story. It's
Please
kind of
do.
Along the same vein. I guess our predictions are becoming rapidly clear. Symantec, Mac, and McAfee as well. Let's see. Symantec, McAfee, and Trend Micro, three of the four top antivirus vendors in the world, announced that they have their software packages that you install on your computer have holes in them that give that provide security access to hackers. So right. If you start running their antivirus software on your computer, it actually makes your computer vulnerable.
Most of these vulnerabilities have to do with their updating process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's just a shocker that the three top big guys have this kind of thing going on, and it's just
and you'd think that virus writers would target these companies because, of course,
so who's the fourth?
CA.
And CA is okay?
Well, they're not listed in this news article. Maybe they didn't have
a better what I heard about Symantec's one, and this is just kind of Lyle's harebrained knowledge of this information, but that basically the updater that got new virus definitions from Symantec, there was a vulnerability in that path of upgrade. So theoretically, someone could inject a patch or a library definition that was inaccurate and therefore allow them to bypass the security of the virus. But of course, if you put in code to an application that's running, like an antivirus software, you should be able to do anything you want, like install a rootkit. Speaking of installing a rootkit, let's cover Sony recently. Their rootkit. You got that, Drew?
I actually have that one.
What happened with Sony's lawsuit and the whole digital rights management CD thing that installed a rootkit on your computer?
So the record label has agreed to settle, and they're compensating buyers of CDs that contained the programs.
How much are they compensating?
Let me see. I'm skimming.
I kind of jumped on you on this one.
$7.50 and a free download of one album. If you bring back your rootkit infected or rootkit enabled CD, depending on
if you haven't already returned it.
Yeah.
So you take your CD and you send it to them. They give you $7 plus a free download.
Well, return your they call it an XCP CD. So okay. Return your rootkit CD to Sony or provide the company with a receipt showing that you returned or exchanged the CD to retailer after November 14th.
All right. Well, it looks like
they've gotten rid of it.
They can exchange the CD for either three albums to be down from over 200 titles. You can download three albums from 200 titles, yeah. Or you can get the $7.50 payment.
Okay, that's good.
And one free download, yeah.
All right, so here's the deal. If you spent too much this holiday season buying fruitcakes, go into your music library and try to find a music CD that's a Sony music CD, and on the back it has something you can detect. Does anyone remember how to detect if it's a... You can put it in your computer, and it takes over your computer, no?
You look at the back of the CD case, and you'll see a URL having to go to it. If it has the letters XCP
in the URL,
then
that's one of them, and you can send it in, get three free albums downloaded, or a free album and $7. So that maybe you can make up for your...
I have a feeling that the stores have already pulled those from their shelves.
You think?
Yeah. Don't go try to buy yeah, one just for $7.
No, but I mean, definitely if you've got one in your collection.
Well, I wonder how many are sitting
in this room
used,
right now.
Warehouses.
Yeah, warehouse. Oh, God.
Well, we've got like 20,000 CDs around us. We should start trying to make some money.
Yeah? Well, it hasn't been out very long. So.
No, it hasn't.
In just right. In case you have one, now you know.
All right.
Money for the station.
Definitely. One prediction, real quick. Who's got one for 2006? Sean, what do you got for 2006? What's
coming? I think people are going to throw away their iPods and pick up the new e-book devices that are coming out.
Throw what? Away their iPods?
I'm kidding. No, I'm throw kid. Actually, there are a bunch of new devices coming out. Sony looks to be trying really hard to be the number one e-book device maker. And they haven't really shown what the device is going to be yet, but it uses e-ink. If you go to e-ink.com,
the new
really
display
cool
types
technology.
That are really clear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not backlit, so they don't strain your eyes. It looks more like reading paper, but it's sharper. And, of course, it's digital, so you would turn pages that way. And it only uses energy to turn the page.
Right. It sets the on and off pixels of the ink, if you will. And then,
yeah, and then that's
no
it.
Energy.
It's, yeah. So
it's kind of like...
Supposedly you can read like up to 15 books on this device.
It's kind of like electronic paper or e-paper. That's what they should call it.
Yeah.
Oh, they do. So Sony's going to release one this year, you think?
Yeah. Oh, Sony has already said they're going to release one.
Okay. Have you seen any of this paper at like CES or anything? Anybody here seen this paper?
No.
See, it's only been shown over in Asia at specific trade
We've
shows.
We've been doing Geek Speak for over 5 years. I remember like the second episode of Geek Speak that we took over.
Talking about
it was like, oh, there's going to be this new way everybody's going to read their books. I mean, we've been talking about reading books on computers forever.
Yeah.
I think I know, I don't know, 10,000 people. And you're the only one that actually reads on portable devices books that I know.
I haven't done it for a while.
Oh, I see.
I did.
It's not even that fun. So,
yeah,
but you also happen to have the largest book collection of anybody I know. So it's kind of like, yeah, you're kind of a fanatic when it comes to books. So of course you're going to read them anytime you can. And if you've got an electronic device, you're going to make
yeah,
it work.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see if it will replace books. Also,
well, the previous books that I've seen, electronic books, that mm-hmm. has failed in a large part because of the content providers. In other words, where they were getting material, mm-hmm. The authors, the...
So that's the other thing. Sony wants to be the largest online source of e-books. So they want to do what Apple has done with iTunes with e-books.
What about the Google project? Who's the guy who invented the printing press? We're not very geeky. There's
it's not geeky enough.
Google is scanning in all the text from the Library of Congress to make available free online.
The Gutenberg.
Gutenberg.
Yeah. Gutenberg project, yeah.
Yeah, Project Gutenberg. So it's essentially open source books or books that are out of their copyright.
Yeah, range. You tell me it has to do with Google, I'll tell you what the name is. Say, like, the original printing press. What? I
don't know. GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our phone numbers to call in and ask us questions or comments, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Our phone answer and fellow web geek, Rick Fillman, is standing by. He's awaiting your call to plug it into us. He actually already has one person waiting. We're about to go to them. If you've got questions or comments about technology, predictions for 2006, disappointments for 2005 with regards to technology, you can call us and participate on GeekSpeak. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. If you're less likely to pick up a phone and more likely to type, we don't discourage you at all. In fact, we encourage you to go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Send us email. We'll even be prepared when we start answering your question, which is always a nice thing. This program, GeekSpeak, is supported by a grant from Cruzio, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruzio membership is available online at cruzio.com or by calling 459-6301. See, Cruzio does the same thing. Phone number or website, GeekSpeak. Phone number, geekspeak.org. Wait, other way around. Website, geekspeak.org.
We always get them mixed up. Like
phone number, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Please join us. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Sean, Miles, and Drew. By the way, Drew, thanks for making it, even though it's a Friday. I really appreciate that.
No, my pleasure.
All right, let's go ahead and go to our first phone caller for today, Jeff from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
I have a question about a Canon camera that I have, a Digital Rebel, and a problem that I have with the LCD screen on the back of the camera.
Okay.
When I view an image that I've taken, the LCD screen is not accurate and shows a brighter image than I've actually taken. And it's particularly a problem when I had a problem with underexposed pictures, and I looked at the LCD screen, and they looked fine. I got home and found that they were terribly underexposed.
And when you fixed the underexposure, you got a lot of graininess?
Yeah, it was so badly underexposed, it was hard to even repair them. I went into Photoshop.
Have you played with your LCD settings?
I have, and I know there's a brightness setting. That doesn't seem to be to solve the problem. And so what I'm trying to find out is whether there's a defect to be repaired or whether that is particular to this particular camera or whether LCD screens simply don't accurately capture the image in terms of its brightness.
I'm going to say that you have a defective camera. Has it been like this since you first got it?
Well, I only had it a year. I discovered it. It's been that way ever since.
Okay. There's quite a few things that could be happening. I mean, it could be that it has some kind of software in it to overexpose on the LCD badly exposed photos, and that really what's going on is your settings are poor for the camera. They're set incorrectly. But and let me just tell you one thing. I've heard nothing bad about Canon Digital Rebels. In fact, I've only heard good things about Canon Digital Rebels. So this is definitely not something that's inherent to all Canon Digital Rebels. Whether it's a setting of yours or some kind of bug in your software or your hardware is unknown. But I would definitely try setting different settings. Like there's sometimes exposure compensation where you can decrease or increase the exposure levels of the camera by default. And
right.
It's possible that you have it set really low, and therefore it's lowering it, right?
I understand about exposure compensation settings that you can do manually, but are you saying there are also automatic settings that you can set the camera to do?
Oh, there definitely is automatic settings, but you can do automatic setting plus you can modify its automatic compensation plus or minus f-stops. So you can make it auto and then make it darker.
Okay.
Do you follow? And that kind of normally goes after the auto because, of course, if it went before the auto would just compensate again to make it the clean picture. So I would definitely go try saying that. One thing you can do is almost all these cameras in the interface somewhere is set to factory resets, right?
Yes.
Just do that. and if the photo is still bad like that, you've got a bad camera.
Well, the problem is not so much that the photos are bad, because my photos are coming out mostly fine. The problem is that I can't rely on the LCD screen after I've taken the image to see if I've got the right settings.
Right.
And I understand about using the histogram, and I'm right. doing that, but I'd like to have the LCD screen approximate what the image actually is.
Okay, well, let's just do this. Anybody out there with a digital Canon Rebel, are you having these kind of problems or not? That's what we want to know. I don't think people are. I think you've got a problem with your LCD. And I would definitely change its brightness down as much as possible. Normally there's a menu item for that as well.
Right.
Good luck.
Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Jeff. Please feel free to call in and participate. The geeks don't know everything. In fact, we know very little. And you're welcome to join us just to tell us what we don't know. 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go ahead and go to Andy in Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello?
Hello, you're on air.
Oh, hi. So I have an embarrassing question.
Is it decent?
Windows XP computer,
okay.
And I run the Norton firewall and virus scan on it, and it's sitting behind another firewall. In a moment of weakness, I let my kids go to a gaming website on a browser, you know, using, it was probably Mozilla, I think. And anyway, since that point in time, the computer doesn't work anymore. So it's good for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then just locks up. I have to physically unplug the machine and reboot it. I can't run a virus scan to completion. I've tried downloading the Microsoft spyware scan stuff, and it won't run to completion before everything locks up. Any ideas?
You've got a problem.
No. Yeah.
Ideas to solve this problem, geeks?
So the machine, what state is it in?
Well, I can boot it. And, you know, have the task manager running, and it looks okay. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes, the task manager won't respond anymore.
Does it not respond to anything?
Nothing, yeah. I mean, this thing is locked up. It's like, you know, bad old DOS days.
Are you sure it's software-related and maybe there's not a heat sink problem?
No, I have no idea what the problem is.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's a heat issue as well.
Is that the timing and the lockup is suspicious? Because it acts like it warms up enough to freeze. Like if your fan, okay, have you looked inside the machine at all? Probably not, huh?
No, I haven't.
So this is not the gaming machine. This is just the machine.
No, it's just the machine I use for work and stuff. It's been fine for 2 years.
If the heatsink fan is dead,
that would explain it.
Totally.
Or it's not up to par. Maybe you're doing something on the machine that's pushing the CPU cycles up.
It's very
possible. Which is overheating.
It's possible there's a virus on the machine that's doing all the cycling, right? I mean, it's possible.
You know, in terms of the CPUs, I looked at, you know, the I.O. use. You know, everything's fine. There's nothing really extreme going on. And then, you know, it kind of freezes up.
Is it pretty regularly do it around the same time?
It seems to be about 10 or 15 minutes, and all of a sudden it kind of locks up.
And then when you restart the machine, does it work right away and still last 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah, it works, you know, right away.
And lasts about 10, 15 minutes, huh?
Yep.
That's not good. That means it's probably not heat. But what you could do is take off the side panel on the machine and boot it up and see if the fan on the CPU is running.
There's okay. There are going to be at least two fans. There's probably. How old is the computer?
About 2 years old. It was a refurbished compact.
Okay, so there's a big block that's going to be up in one corner. That's with all the wires coming out of it. That's your power supply. And that'll have a fan inside of it, and it'll be blowing exhaust air out the back of the machine. You should be able to put your hand in front of the back of the machine and feel the air blowing out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you want to be sure there's air blowing out there. And then most likely there's a heat sink on the processor, which will look like a big metal
fan.
A bunch of vanes with a fan mounted on the top of it.
Kind of like an old radiator on a car.
Yeah, exact same idea. So the fan blows air through those vanes and cools the heat, takes the heat energy away from the processor. That fan has to be running or else you'll lock up like
that. And when you touch that heat sink, don't touch most stuff on the board. When you touch the heat sink, it should actually be warm.
It might be really hot.
If it's really, really hot, then you might have a problem. But if it's really, really cool, it could be a problem in between the heatsink and the processor.
Are you using SBC Global?
Yes, I am.
You know, I noticed that one of their DNS servers went down over the holiday. I have several machines at home, and I was using my router to do DHCP, automatically provide all these addresses.
Yep.
Some machines I was getting access, but after a long time, and others none at all. And I'm scratching my head. Why isn't this working?
Did XP lock up when it was doing this?
No, it didn't lock up. Okay. But my connectivity was just not there. And what I did is I swapped the DNS entries. I made my secondary my primary,
and that worked fine.
Everything.
Well, that has no bearing on what he's talking about. But
well, actually, it's kind of interesting. So I moved, and you know, right about the time this machine freaked out and stuff, and I've been having tons of trouble. And I wonder if that's a lot of my networking trouble might be because of that.
You shook the machine, or there's a physical problem there that's possible.
You know, another thing that can happen on machines, especially if they've been worked on by non-OEMs, sometimes a cable can get kind of rejarred and run into the fan, and it blocks the fan from spinning. And especially on the processor fan, that's a problem. I would definitely open it up and take a look and make sure those fans are spinning.
Well, that's a quick and easy thing to do. So
yeah. There's one more thing. The connection between where the fan plugs into the motherboard, there's a little plug. Just check that while you're in there.
We are really into quick and easy solutions, even if they don't work. Thank you, Andy, for the call.
Good luck, Andy.
Good luck.
Thanks.
All right. It's been a while since we did a lot of focus last week we did a lot of focus on call as well. We like to do that. So if you'd like to join us, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Another question about Windows OS from Aptos. Scott, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a brief comment about the guy with the Rebel with the inaccurate LCD display. That those things, I think, are notoriously inaccurate, and that, I believe he's on the right track with looking at his histogram. I have a Sony camera, and it often looks brighter than the file is actually being written. And
great.
I think he'll be happier in the long run if he just gets used to looking at the histogram and kind of judging from that whether he has a good exposure or not, and using the screen as a very rough guide.
Okay, well, that's depressing, but thank you very much for that information. So the Canon did the Rebel, most Sony stuff. Well, this is a Canon, not a Sony, but
right.
But the displays are bad. What you've noticed, they don't match what the photo looks like.
Yes, I mean,
okay.
And since he has an SLR, he can use the viewfinder for viewing and try to get the best exposure he knows with his traditional camera skills, and then he can still back that up by looking at the histogram. And what it looks like on the screen, I think, should be the last thing to use.
All right.
By the way, I have a problem. I have a Windows machine, and this might be hard to believe, but they actually ship them without virus protection, up-to-date virus protection. And to register Windows, you have to go online and use their browser. And so when I did that the very first time I went online, I got a bad worm last year, and I uninstalled it.
First time?
Yes, I've been using NT4 for years without any problem, and this is my very first time. And I actually spoke to you guys about it, and you said I would need to. You used the analogy of a tree falling on a house, and you repair the house, but there's still some broken pieces in there. And so now, whenever I
that's a really cool analogy. I don't think we did that. But go on.
No, I remember it. I was impressed.
Must have been Miles.
So now, whenever I turn on. During one of the very initial black screens, I see it says invalid boot .ini file, and I'm not sure what that means.
Oh, no.
Oh, for heaven's sake, don't turn on that computer.
Invalid boot.ini file is what comes up on the screen?
And then it boots, and it welcomes me, and everything seems fairly fine, except every once in a while, especially if it's been on for hours, everything will it'll turn off.
Wait, you have a Windows machine that stays on for hours? Well, consider yourself lucky, man.
Lyle is in for Windows today.
I know. Not all of us can afford Apple. So it turns off every once in a while. Actually, both screens turn completely black as if someone pulled the cord, and then it reboots normally.
So is this the box that had the infection when you initially connected? The same machine?
Yes, it's still the same one. So
how'd you get rid of the infection the first time or find out about it?
I called up the people I got it from, and they suggested going to, I think, the Symantec site.
Yeah.
And they were pretty aware of what it was, and they told me a specific removal tool to get.
A procedure to go through.
Yeah, I think it was which one it was. I think my, it's not
okay. Good. Well, I don't think that that initial virus, if you're not seeing the signs of a virus, I don't think that's causing your blackout problem or the machine rebooting. That sounds like a hardware issue because.
No, the boot.ini, if it was corrupted by that virus the first time and had to be moved or rewritten, relocated to another place. Might be some weird leftover chips in that house still.
Yeah.
Branches.
So there's still no way to simply repair the broken pieces.
Well, the simplest way in our recommendation is reinstall the machine. That's not always easy for... It depends on how sophisticated you are.
But, you know, that's the best way to do it. Make sure you've got Service Pack 2 around before you do that, because it's going to be useful to have that prior to connecting to the Internet.
I'm sorry, to have what?
Service Pack 2. So the extra disk you normally have probably don't have Service Pack 2, which is a later update.
It didn't come with the machine, but I have it now. So
right.
How could I...
You don't have any CDs at all, do you?
No, I have the initial installation.
Okay, so what you want to do is go to Microsoft's site and try to and look around. I don't know where it is at this point, but you should normally be able to ask them for Service Pack 2 to be mailed to you because you're an owner of a valid Internet Explorer. I'm sorry, Windows XP. So
I did do that because...
then you've got the CDs. Then we recommended it, right?
But by some other smart people, I think you guys. And So I do have that. But
okay, so what you want to do is just do a clean install of Windows XP and then do the Service Pack 2 and then connect your computer to the Internet.
And what about the latest upgrades to Windows? Like just yesterday, I wanted to upgrade, and they only allow you to use their
Internet Explorer.
Browser.
Once you install Service Pack 2, and then click on Windows Update on your Start menu, you'll go directly to Microsoft's site. You will not incur dangers of some vulnerability.
You do have to use Internet Explorer to get their updates.
It should be safe.
I have not heard of any issues, vulnerabilities with that part of Microsoft.
Thank you very much for the call.
Oh, okay, appreciate it, guys. Bye.
Bye, Scott. All right, this is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're on KOSP because it's such a great station. And in the air with me is Sean, Miles, and Drew. And we're taking your calls and questions of technology. The phone numbers, well, we've got a few people on in there, but you might put it in. Best way to contact us right now, of course, is to go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Let me go ahead and go to Santa Cruz again. And I'm not going to try this name. Renento?
Yes, something like that.
Okay.
I have a question, and I take off the air to listen to your reply. But I was wondering if there is any device out there that it's portable audio recorder, iPod type of thing, but that can record also.
Okay.
Is there anything like that around?
The iPod can do that.
iPod records?
You can get a microphone for it, and normally microphone has actually the device that I've seen has an audio in as well on that microphone, and you can record with it. I'm not sure how you do the installation of the software to record with it, but it's mono. Most people that I know get Sony mini discs, which are really problematic. That's what we use the station here.
Yeah, I had two. They died out after some.
What I've got in front of me right now is a Marantz. It's a Marantz Professional. It's a flash recorder. No hard drive. It's got a flash card in it. And it's really expensive, and it's really wonderful.
And Marantz?
Marantz, Marantz. And I don't recall the model number on this, and it's wrapped up right now. But it's a great little product. It costs like $700, $600, something like that. It's a professional quality one. And it's not exactly the easiest solution.
The iRiver.
Sean?
I've got an iRiver H340. It's a 40-gig hard drive on it. It's got a color screen. It does a lot of things. One of the things it does really well is record audio through a built-in microphone, and it also has a little microphone jack that you can add a better microphone.
It also has an FM radio in it?
Yeah, and you can record directly from the FM radio. All the reception is kind of...
What's it called again?
It's called... Go to iRiver USA or iRiverAmerica.com. iRiver.
iRiver, okay.
Yeah, and it's a company over in Silicon Valley.
Thanks much.
Yeah, it's the H300 series.
Thank you,
Renato. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Sean, you didn't name your daughter after that device, did you? You liked it that much?
Well, I have an iRiver and I have my river.
Oh,
that is so lame.
Let's
okay,
get some email, please.
Oh, please.
I did not. No.
We've got Judith from Watsonville who called in with two questions. And I like them. The first one is, how does Safari do in terms of vulnerability compared to IE or Firefox in regards to our conversation this morning? Miles, did they track it on the site?
They didn't track it on that particular site. Sorry as they didn't. The site was mostly tracking browsers that are available on Windows, and so Safari is only available on the Mac, and so they kind of excluded it.
I'll answer that question from my own personal feeling. There's nobody's taken an exploit of a Safari vulnerability in quite a long time. The last one was a problem with Macintosh where a help file could be launched remotely.
I've seen security vulnerabilities.
There's security vulnerabilities, but I haven't seen anybody use them.
It's a lot of time to put towards writing a virus to affect a few hundred people.
Exactly. I think if you look at market share is what's really key.
I think it's 30 or 40 people, actually.
Boy. Well, you look at Explorer has the lion's share. They have the lion's share of security problems. Then Mozilla, then Opera in our case here.
I've heard some
Safari beyond that.
I've heard some great discussions, though, about that. that might not really be the reason why there's so many viruses on Windows, that there's more customers, if you will. But in general, if you've got a Macintosh and you're using Safari, don't worry until you hear us on GeekSpeak Saturdays at 10. Tell you that there's a problem out there, then you can start worrying about it.
Now she has a second part to her question. A lot of dial-up companies talk about how great their accelerator technology is. Is there much difference between the speed of different ISPs for dial-up users?
Yeah, it's slow, a little slower, a little faster, but it's pretty much all slow.
You know, the accelerator technology just compresses the data before it sends it, so less data is being sent. But I think it uses processor power to do that. It's good.
Yeah,
so if you have a really slow processor, I remember reading something, it will actually slow your connection down.
Can anyone tell that all of us have high-speed bandwidth? I think so.
So I'm assuming Miles, that Judith in Watsonville is kind of stuck because she's too remote maybe to get DSL cable.
Or doesn't want to spend the extra cost, yeah.
It's gotten to be so cheap these days. I think Yahoo DSL is running a special for 6 months for $13 now.
Wow, I mean, you pay every month, yeah.
It's, I don't know, depending on how much it's worth to you. The accelerators, I don't think I would bother with.
But you're assuming that the person's going to be in range of broadcast.
Absolutely. If you don't have a choice, then accelerators.
I think if you're with an ISP that doesn't have the accelerator and you want to switch IPs to just get that accelerator, it's probably not that worth it.
Well, except for the fact that Google Accelerator, you don't need the ISP's help.
Okay, so Google Accelerator is, what's going on there is kind of devious and strange, but the basic idea is lots of times when you're browsing a web page, you're not actually doing anything but sitting there and reading, and nothing's being downloaded on your modem, so you're not taking full advantage of your bandwidth. So what Google Accelerator does is looks at all the links on the website you're currently on, goes to those in the background, saves all that data on your computer.
While you're sitting there reading the page.
Gets a head start.
And it compresses.
Yeah.
And when you click on that link to actually open it, the browser first checks the local cache in your computer, and if it's there, it serves it from there, and it's really fast.
Yeah, that's really smart.
That's probably smarter than the compression accelerator.
There are some problems with it. You do not want to use it if you're using mail, like Yahoo Mail or something, because some of the links on there actually delete this message, and you don't want Google to just say, oh, let's step through this thing and click on all the links and load them, because that link might actually delete your message. So there's been some problems with the Google Accelerator, and there's a lot of talk in the web communities about this. But in general, if you want faster, try it.
Yeah, of course, Google's not too interested in fixing an issue with Yahoo, right?
Right, probably not. But I think they're pretty good about checking if it's an email client. A web email client, and restricting its automatic caching of all those pages. But yeah, I mean, definitely give it a shot. It's always a fun thing to play with. And if it's a lot faster and you're happier, then go for it. I think you'll run into some problems, though.
You know, a lot of people use AOL still, just because they have connectivity all over the world, local access all over the world, which is what you don't have with broadband. Mm. You leave the state of California or New York, and
or
you're kind
houses.
Of in a big internet hole.
Well, I know a lot of people who are in the Midwest who have broadband.
But not coffee houses
so much in places with free access.
Thanks for doing that email, Drew.
And thank you, Judith, for writing into us.
Now we have
Happy
Gene.
New Year.
Now we have Gene from Watsonville. Hello, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I need to get a new laptop because mine's 5 years old and doesn't run things I need to run now.
What do you currently have?
I have a G3.
Okay. One of those clamshell-looking things?
Black keys.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
Are you interested in switching over to Windows?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I definitely want a Mac, and I definitely want a laptop.
Okay. Your basically concern would be to go for price, and there are basically four options. You can get an iBook, which is a white thing, which is a G4 now. You can get a 12-inch, a 15-inch, or a 17-inch screen PowerBook, which is a little more powerful, better processor, more memory, things of that nature. Miles is using an older iBook in front of him right now. I'm using a PowerBook. You can also wait for another year and hope that an Intel box comes out through Apple.
Think it's going to be another whole year?
I think it's going to happen in 2006. My prediction for 2006 is Apple will release a laptop with Intel processors in 2006, because they said they would, and they're pretty good about that. I would wait. I know that's really bad, but because the Intel processor
is going to have this poor lady keep her 5-year-old notebook and wait for a maybe processor.
You got a friend you could borrow a laptop from. The Intel line Macintoshes are going to be so fantastically better than the current G4, G5 line that it's going to it's going to be worth it. Miles, how do you feel about that?
It depends on whether you need a laptop now or if you need a laptop in 2 years.
If you wait that Intel processor comes out, guess what? There'll be a really cool one after that.
And, of course, they're going to have to recoup all their expense on doing this, and so the first ones are going to be expensive.
Right. So hence the 2 year.
You're a patient lady if you've already waited 5 years.
You are not going to be unhappy getting a current G4 laptop from... if you've got a G3 currently. You're going to just... it's going to be amazingly better. So...
it'll do a lot more stuff than you can currently do.
So how's that? We totally didn't answer your question and gave you a lot of talk.
Yeah, that's been helpful.
That's what we do every week on Geek Speak.
Just buck up and you can go... If you really want to sell your soul to the devil, Dell's got $250 notebooks right on the front page.
With that, you just switch over to Windows for a couple of years.
You get an entry-level notebook for $250.
That is really cheap.
It's unbelievable.
iBook is the cheaper one. It's white. It's really nice. If you're going to invest in a Macintosh, go ahead and go to one of the fancy stores because you'll feel so good about it when you do it. So, because it's really nice to go there. Also, if you've got a friend or family member who works in university or is a student at a university and can get you those student discount prices, do that because it'll save you a bunch.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, and then with being I'm not usually an early adopter, so would there be more security problems possibly with...
with a new notebook?
Yeah.
No,
you're going to be fine. In fact, you'll be safer on OS 10 than OS 9. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. We're losing headphones. The geeks aren't able to hear everything that's going on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
That's all that matters, man.
Muffled through the earphones.
All right, we're going to go to our KUSP's very own Milos. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Hey.
I'm running an XP home, and I'm having trouble with Outlook Express. About a week or so ago, it started having a delay. First of all, when I click on the Outlook Express, that little blue square thing, it takes about a minute to actually come up to the program. And then once I select an email, if I want to respond to it, I click on the respond, and it takes maybe a minute and a half for the response window to come up. And then when I type it, there's sometimes delays inside, and then when I go to send, there's maybe a minute and a half delay, and then it will send it. So it's working, but there's this delay. And I've tried virus scan, spyware scan, I've tried I defragged the hard drive, all those things.
So Outlook, basically everything about Outlook is slow and going slower. You do a reply message, it takes a minute and a half to pop the window up. You launch the application, it takes a minute and a half to launch. Anything takes a long time in Outlook.
Yeah.
Okay. What virus protection software are you running?
McAfee.
And you're up to date on all of its.
Yes.
Geeks got anything on Outlook being really slow? Don't use Outlook.
Reinstall.
Well, I don't know if this is specific to Outlook. It may just be a symptom. Yeah. Maybe, Mappy integration. It may be, who knows.
The geeks right now can't hear you, but we're all thinking that it's a symptom because of, like, Mappy IMAP. But
I'm talking about Mappy, the mail API.
I think what you want to do is uninstall Outlook and reinstall Outlook. You can do that if you've got the Windows Office CDs. If you're using Outlook Express, I think you have to do that from the Windows CD. It's definitely a shot, but that shouldn't be happening. Are you noticing this slowdown on any other apps?
No. Okay. In fact, Internet Explorer is working fine. It's just the Outlook. Now, if I unload and reload, I'm going to lose all my files, right?
Your email is local, and it's saved under Documents and Settings. If you follow through the Documents and Settings path, your username, and then you'll find Application Support and Outlook, your files will be there. Get a copy of that whole thing and save it somewhere else before you do the upgrade. Make sure to find your profile information, and you'll be set. Thank you very much. Since you're a volunteer for KUSP, I want to help you on this. So I don't want to help anybody on this, but please go to geekspeak.org and send us an email so that I can help you out on this, or give me a call. I'm on the phone list for KUSP. Okay?
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the call.
Good show.
Bye-bye. Well, unfortunately, I've run out of time again on Geek Speak, as we do every week. And that's it for us this week. And next week, We will not be here on Friday, okay? But wonderful programming will be here on Friday, as it is every day of the week. GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. The Geeks This Morning, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Rick Philman answering the phones. Thank you. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Next week, GeekSpeak is moving to its new Bat Time, new Bat Channel, or new Geek Time, new Geek Channel. No, it's still going to be on KOSP, of course, and we're switching over to 10 o'clock on Saturday, and we'll be following Dr. Dawn, a wonderful program. So your Saturday morning is going to be filled with complete bliss on KOSP. 10 a.m., Geeks will be here. Next week, we'll be talking about technology to make your computer life safer for your children, and in general, dealing with computers and children. That's what we'll be doing next week. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arturo, on the web at kosp.org. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Coming up next is Open Road, and after that at 1 p.m., Two Steps to the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening.